Hey guys.
Hello.
Hi.
It's a bit of a delay. Is this isn't going to be a problem, is
I think
it?
that was a deliberate delay because I think Rach and me both thought, who's going to say it first? And I took the plunge in a strong act of leadership.
You took the lead.
No, this is what happens when Hugh's on holiday. He gets refreshed and ideas above his station.
Yeah, this is true.
Shall we get on with it?
Let's do it.
You're listening to the Real Reading Podcast.
Hello.
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 I'm Hugh Fort.
I'm Rachel Nemeth.
And I'm Tom Canning. And welcome to episode 109 of the Real Reading Podcast. You can give us a like on Twitter at Real Reading Pod. You can search Real Reading Podcast Group to join us on Facebook as well. This week we are discussing the headlines, which includes the Purple Turtle and some quite emotional statements from the business regarding the the Reading institution regarding the current curfew. We also have a bit of a follow up on the COVID marshals that we were talking about last week, and we are also I can't remember who, I don't know who it was that tracked him down, but someone has tracked down the Reading man who sent the first ever text message, which is great. I'm looking forward to discussing that one. As well as that, we speak to Hannah Lowther, a young West End star who's making the best of the current situation, given that all of the theatres, and especially on the West End, have all been shut down. But she's been busy cheering us all up on TikTok, and we've had a good chat with her, so look out for that a little bit later on. Coming up over the next few weeks, we've got a few great guests to put before you. We speak to Special Sergeant MM Adebola, who is excellent on Twitter, worth looking him up. We've got friend of the show James Carter, who will be speaking about World Mental Health Day, which is next month, October the 10th, I believe. And we've also managed to get hold of Two Rivers Press, who are the publisher of some of Hugh's favourite books. That's right, isn't it, Hugh? I've remembered that correctly.
Yes, that is correct, yes. Bizarre Berkshire book, where I got the alien story from, we talked about last week, is excellent. And there are various others. It's very much a focus on sort of quirky local history coming from there. And they very kindly send me the copies of these books. And they're all very good, very interesting.
Excellent. Okay, well, in the meantime, here's Jeremy with how you can get in touch with us.
Get in touch with the team. Email hello at realreadingpodcast.co.uk. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at realreadingpod. And join our Facebook group by searching Real Reading Podcast.
Thanks very much, Jeremy. Hugh, is that you moving around all over the place again?
Yes, sorry, my mate.
It sounded like you were blowing up a balloon.
I definitely
or
wasn't.
A baby elephant had moved in. Oh, look, now I've just dropped a coaster.
Oh, my word.
It did that thing where it sticks to the bottom of your glass and then fell off. Sorry about that.
That's all right. I promise to make no noise whatsoever. However, I wanted to bring something to your attention. This is something I picked up off Twitter over the last week or so. We've had a new... Is it an order ordained? Is that what happened? When you get sainted? What happened? What do you call it?
That sounds
when you get
right.
Sainted? Is it
sounds
ordained?
Right, yeah.
Or is it canonized? Is that right? I'm not sure.
No, surely that'd be a canon.
Wouldn't it?
If only you'd look this up before you started, Tom.
Yeah. Oh, no. When you're canonized, you are. It's in the Roman Catholic Church. Officially declare a dead person to be a saint. There we go. Oh, I was right. I was absolutely right. So we have a new saint in town, and this is I don't know if you'll be familiar with Saint Ndard. Ndard.
No. What have they done?
The patron saint of curry. Which is fantastic news. I've long thought that the humble curry dish deserved some sort of cultural icon to really push things forward. It's a shame we had to wait for Mr. Ndard to pass on, because I'd have loved to have met him or her. I'm not sure whether man or woman. No, in all seriousness, this is a this is a humorous tweet that I saw during the week from a chap called Gordon Ball at GRG Ball on Twitter, who spotted that the A had fallen down from the standard tandoori sign on Caversham Road, and is now St. Ndard, which is marvellous news. So I thought, I just wondered whether there were other things in Reading that deserved a patron saint of something.
Traffic.
Oh, yes, very good.
The patron, oh dear me.
The patron saint of traffic would be...
Does it not suggest, if you're going to become a saint of something, it suggests you're already brilliant at it, though?
You could be the patron saint of traffic in Reading. Could be Saint Ationary.
That's really quite good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody on board with that one?
Saint Ationary.
Yeah. Thank you very much. That's what happens when I take time off work. Refresh.
Patron saint of concrete. We've got a lot of that going on.
Yes. Yep. Patron saint of sandwiches.
Sandwiches. Are we famous for our sandwiches?
Well, yes.
In Shed, you mean?
Yes. Shed and what's the other one? The Pierre's. Pierre's baguette.
Oh, yeah. I do like a Pierre's baguette.
Yeah. So good. We're good at sandwiches. I think that's
If you had cheese in your sandwich, it could be Saint Ilton.
You're on a roll.
Should we move on swiftly before he absolutely ruins this with an absolute misery one in a minute?
Well, aren't there some other establishments, though, Tom, like that have names that sort of lend themselves to a bit of comedy and branching out? As we were talking... Yeah, we're trying to remember in our planning meeting some like comedy shop. Have you forgotten them all, or are you just going to make me say them all?
No, I've forgotten all of them. I've forgotten all of them.
Well, I started off with the wok and roll.
Yes.
And then you went with the knob shop.
Yes, with the knob shop, which was great.
London Street. And then that made me remember in my repping days many moons ago a shop in Bracknell called Bullcock and Bits,
that
which
was
always made me chuckle when I had to go and see them. They're apparently still there.
They are indeed, yes. Just
and it is a completely innocent name, all plumbing related, but
it
is my dirty mind that twisted that.
I think we'll just end this swiftly with me remembering now that we've started talking about this, that when we used to back in the old days when we were young, free and single and out on the town, Rach, and I used to sleep on your couch, we'd go to Mamaris kebab shop on the Caversham Road, and I'd amusingly always say, we're going to Mamaris.
That was just your wishful thinking.
Yeah. I'd always think that was hilarious, and it's not really. It's very juvenile. And I am above such things these days.
As per 10 years ago, I gave it a polite chuckle there.
That is great, great, great memories, guys. Great memories of the old days.
Fantastic memories. God, Hugh, you should go on holiday more often. You're comedy gold today.
Had a good sleep.
Good.
Right, shall we move on to the news?
Yes.
Hi guys, welcome back. It is news time. Some I don't know whether it's big news, it's just we talked about it briefly last week. COVID marshals potentially coming to Reading. But actually it turns out that we won't be having any COVID marshals because Reading Borough Council have decided that they're not going to crack on with it, which is a whether that I don't know if it's a bit of a shame or what. I can't remember really how I felt about it. I think we did decide that it perhaps wasn't a job that we fancied doing, but yes, it certainly looks like there will be no COVID marshals in Reading. What do we think? Is this a good thing? Do we think that COVID? I suppose none of us have really been into town at all, particularly. So whether we feel, I don't know whether we can really answer that question. But certainly the jobs had been advertised. And so hopefully no one had actually gone to the effort of wasting any time applying for them. Reading Borough Council says it's not considering introducing them in Reading at this time. Thoughts?
Well, I think to police the whole of, that's not the right word, is it? To marshal the whole of Reading. That's going to take quite a few people to do that, surely. Because it's not just marshalling in the town centre and, you know, checking that pubs have kicked out at 10 o'clock or whatever. It's meant to be making sure that people aren't having large gatherings at their homes and so on and so forth. So I guess if you were to have enough people to kind of cover the whole of the town and the suburbs, and I think this was the point of the council in the article, who's going to pay for that?
Yeah, it says the article says the adverts were placed speculatively by a security company, and the council says in light of the lack of guidance from government on the job role and enforcement powers of COVID marshals, or where we would find these people, and the fact that there is currently no government funding for local authorities to introduce them, the council is not considering introducing them in Reading at this time. Hugh, you'll be very familiar with the financial issues and burdens that the council has at the moment, and it won't be a surprise, I'm sure, that they aren't going to be going ahead with this without any sort of help, financial help.
It's pretty well, that statement's pretty damning, isn't it? It basically says you want us to have COVID marshals and you expect us to pay for them, but you haven't told us at all what's required and you're not giving us any help, and therefore we're not going to do it, which is because we haven't got any money. You know, that's kind of what's been happening throughout this, where the government comes up with an idea and then somebody says, oh yes, we'll recruit these people, and then there's no indication of how it's going to be paid for, who's going to run it or anything like that. And Reading Council quite rightly has said if they're not going to give us any information about what we're expected to do, we're not going to fund these roles. So it's just another thing in the long list of things that are just actually turning out to be a complete waste of time and effort. I hope, feel very sorry for anyone who's applied for any of these jobs, particularly as you had to do some sort of training as well to be able to apply. So I hope no one's done paid for an online course in the hope of applying for one of these jobs and then found out actually they don't exist. It just sounds like I don't know if I can use the term. It sounds like another cock up, really, coming from above. Reading Council's just sort of saying we're not going to facilitate it unless you give us some money to do it. That'll take months to come in anyway now. And so almost certainly not going to happen. So
they have to have a security personnel. Qualification, didn't they?
Yeah, I think we established last week you needed a certain level of security qualification to even do this in the first place. So it does seem a little bit I think we could go down a long road here of of general balls ups, but I think it seems to me to be sound bites a lot of the time from the government without actual thought of how these things are going to be implemented, and this seems like just another one, as you say, Hugh.
Yeah, and especially at this point in time where, you know, so many people have been affected by losing their jobs, and if they saw that role come up and thought, right, okay, so the bar that I worked at is not reopened. This is something I could do instead. Great bit of hope. Going through the rigmarole of applying for it and then, you know, getting knocked back before you even started. Yeah. I know from experience of friends who were in similar situations that it really does knock your confidence, and the fact that you're in a boat with lots of people doesn't make any difference to that.
Yeah.
So to then have your confidence knocked again by being told, oh yeah, actually it was a pretend job in the first place, is not cool.
Well, we will be talking to someone a little later on who has been through that sort of situation with their line of work not reopening just yet and having to take a job elsewhere. We'll be covering that. But this kind of moves us on nicely to another one of these sort of recent edicts that has been put in place. And this is the 10 p.m. closure of pubs, bars and restaurants, which has hit quite heavily across the country, and one of Reading's most famous sort of legendary bars, the Purple Turtle, has had its say on the situation. The bar manager, Stuart McNaught, has put out a statement on the Purple Turtle Facebook page to do with what was going on, and he says the biggest concern now is how long this will go on for, how long we as a pub will go on for. It's too early to say. Obviously, I'm a bit emotional. People want to do fundraising for us, but we're not at that stage yet. And the Purple Turtle has been on Gun Street or in and around Gun Street for about 30 years through recessions and that kind of thing. So it's obviously the key thing here is that the Purple Turtle is a late night venue, and there are a number of late night venues around Reading. But the Turtle is obviously an absolute favourite, and there has since been a further statement from the Turtle, which I'll read out in a few minutes. But obviously, this curfew's come in, and it's hit pubs and bars and restaurants hard. Hugh, you were saying there doesn't seem to be a lot of evidence to suggest that it's a helpful curfew.
No, I did a piece on this. Before I went off, I spoke to a few different people, and the sort of general message is that, one, from a restaurant point of view, if you close at 10, that means you're going to have to start turning people away who want to eat from about 9 o'clock. So it's not like any kind of walk-in late-ish food trade is going to be very, very difficult. Likewise, you're going to, if someone is in, and they're taking their time and having a few drinks and a chat, you're going to have to start coming up to them saying, "Look, I'm really sorry, you know, the curfew's coming, can you finish up?" Which is not what any customer wants, really. And it's not what a restaurant owner wants to do. The last thing they want to do is to kick someone out before they've offered them the cheese board and the coffee or whatever. and they were saying as well, sort of from a health point of view, doesn't make any sense, because it goes back to the old days of Rach, I'm sure you remember when all the pubs used to kick out at 11 o'clock in Reading.
Why is that directed at me?
Because Tom never used to go to Reading because he's from Bracknell.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so you'd get a mass spillage of people out onto the streets all at the same time, and to the point where the government eventually changed the licensing laws because there was so it was like the Wild West, where everyone was in the same place at the same time trying to get home. And he says, then they were saying, you know, from a health point of view, it's exactly the same. You've got all the people who are in town on the streets at the same time, potentially infecting each other, potentially fighting with each other, and all trying to get home, having had probably too much alcohol to drive. So it just seems that the general view is just it's just a bit pointless in terms of trying to curb the spread of coronavirus, and it's having a massive massive financial impact of them. A lot of them saying they're trying not to get rid of their staff, but their hours are reducing anyway because of the curfew, and they'll probably have to reduce them even more. And kitchens are closing earlier, and generally speaking, places like the Moderation, which I spoke to, said that the sort of 2 hours up until midnight, which is what their license is at the weekend, after people have had their dinner and stuff like that, there's just people in the pub drinking. That's a big earner for them, which they've lost. And they don't really understand why, the point of it, how how it helps.
Well, I drove home from somewhere on Friday night last week, and it was about 10:15, I think, and I drove through Caversham, and it was the busiest on the streets that I've seen it ever, possibly. There was like big groups of people outside the little Tesco, people at the kebab van, people wandering about. It was really, really busy for exactly that reason that you just said, Hugh, that, you know, if the pubs and bars are open for longer, people leave when they've had enough at staggered times, naturally, rather than en masse. And all that's happening is people are leaving the pub, going to the Tesco or whatever, wherever they happen to be, stocking up on some booze and taking it home because you're not ready for your evening to finish just yet at 10 o'clock. It just makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever. And with the Purple Turtle and any other establishment like them who are predominantly a late night venue, I don't understand what difference it makes. If you've restricted the number of people coming into the place in anyway, which they have bouncers there all the time, so they can do that, what difference does it make if you're sat with a pint at 9:30 or 1:30 in the morning? COVID doesn't have a curfew where it suddenly comes out at 10:05, so I don't understand the logic.
I think this
they'll probably do a U-turn on it because that's what seems to happen.
What this all seems to do, all this really seems to do, is seem to take people away from just the fact that we need to try and stop spreading this virus, which is stopping us all from doing what we want to do, what we want to, our sort of normal lives. I know there's lots of people who've quite enjoyed the lockdown because it's changed the way they've done things and it's made big positive differences to their lives. But ultimately, the whole thing is to try and stop the spread of this virus. And I just feel like all of these curfews and I'm starting to feel like all of these curfews and ideas and stuff and COVID marshals, it all just sort of, it's avoiding the fact that the message really just should be stay 2 meters apart from each other, be sensible, and we'll beat it. And I know I am not a doctor or a professor or a medical professional in any way, but I'd like to think I know a little bit about getting a message out. And all of this does is just confuse things and takes people away from that core idea that we need to be smart and sensible and steer clear of each other. Really, if you're in a pub that's got tables separate from each other, then then that's being smart and sensible whilst also trying to have a normal life.
Absolutely. And if you're putting things in place like the standard, like stay apart, wear your mask when you're meant to, sanitize your hands regularly, wash your hands regularly, people are on board with those kind of things for the majority.
Yeah.
But when you start implementing things that feel nonsensical, then people are just confused, frustrated and irritated by it, and they're not going to adhere to it because it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And it's not necessarily the fault of social media, the media or anything like that, but it's just all because of these enhanced ways that we have of putting stuff out there. You know, even our podcast is another form of, and us even talking about it now is another form of, you know, making more noise about it. It's an excuse. It gives everybody, we don't need all these extra reasons to be talking about all these different things. It should just be really straight, simple, follow the real basic rules that we had at the very start. And that whole thing to me seems to have got lost.
Yeah.
And it'd be really straightforward to switch it back and just go right back to, was it John Major that said back to basics?
Yeah.
Didn't think especially he had John Major quoted on the podcast.
He used to fascinate me because he, when I was a kid, because clearly everybody in the country hated him, but he seemed to just carry on. And now when I see him at the cricket, I sort of feel slightly just a gentle sort of, oh yeah, just John Major, just watching the cricket, enjoying himself. I feel like he probably deserves a break.
Is anyway. He as grey in real life as he appears?
spitting image.
Is his spitting image character?
Yeah. He'd only eat peas with his wife, Norma, yeah.
Yes. I've just been sidetracked by the fact that there is a gigantic spider crawling down the wall in the room just adjacent to me.
Oh, lovely.
Which is marvellous. Sorry, I'm just going to point to my wife just up there in the corner.
Is she going to be brave enough to remove it?
I don't know. Oh, she tried to get him the other night and he ran away. I'm sorry, listeners don't necessarily need to know about the antics of the spider in my house, but I'm certainly not going to cut this bit out. And should we move on just to the last bit, which I think is a slightly lighter bit, which is Neil Papworth, the Reading man who sent the first ever text message. We talked about him a couple of weeks ago in the Heritage Trail piece, but he was tracked down. Hugh, do you know who tracked him down? Was it you?
Yes.
I can't remember. How did you track him down?
I found him on Facebook. I think you were hoping for a tale of incredible sleuthery there.
Yes.
I tracked back through his history and worked out, found him working in Canada, and but no, I found him on Facebook and recognised his picture from stuff we've had before of him. So, sorry, it's not very interesting. I interviewed him. I Zoom called with him, which was quite cool. And he told me the tale of the first ever text message back in 1992.
What fascinates me about this story is that, so me and Rach especially have worked on, projects for the company that we're in. And, this guy, from reading his story, he was just working on a project for Vodafone. It just so happened that project became the sort of world phenomenon of text messaging, and he happened to send the first. Could happen to any one of us, Rach. Could have been you or me.
Yeah, I wonder if he knew at the time that this is going to be like world changing.
Did he allude to anything like that, Hugh? Because I didn't see anything like that in the story.
No, he said, it was what they were. The aim was to start to move from to add messaging to, because at the time in 1992 you could only make phone calls from mobile phones. I don't think he thought that message would be the only one that ever got sent. He would have been thinking that this would be the start of something, but I can't imagine anyone would have thought at that time, how many billions and trillions and zillions and squillions would get sent every day around the world because of that first test, if you like, that he did back in 1992.
Have a mobile phone until 1998, I don't think.
Yeah, I think I was 1998 when I first got my Nokia.
The 3210.
No, I didn't even have the 3210. I think it was, I can't even remember what it was called. 3110, was it? It had
Snake on it though, right?
It had Snake and a little aerial at the top as well. Mm-hmm. And when I first got it, I had a deal where it was pay as you go, but you got 10 free messages a day, but you were only allowed to send 10 messages a day. And then you had to wait. So in those days, like, you'd be having a chat with someone at about 11 o'clock at night, and then you'd run out of messages and have to wait until midnight to be able to send you your next allocation as well. That deal was scuppered pretty quickly, obviously. But yeah, he sent the first message to a guy in Newbury from Reading, and he sent it from a computer. And such was the time that there was no way of him, the bloke who got the message successfully, being able to reply to the message, because he couldn't send any back anyway, and obviously he was working on a computer. And so there was this comical situation where he'd sent the message, had no idea whether it had been received, and then about, I don't know, 20 minutes later or something, someone else in the room to say, "I've got the message," on their giant mobile phone. And he said, it was a great success. It was at some company do, and he was presenting to the big wigs, and so he was able to show them his phone with his message on. And but the actual two-way messaging didn't happen for another couple of years. So at the time you were only able to send a message to someone who then couldn't respond to it. But I guess I quite know the details, because presumably someone could then send you a message back at some point from their phone. But maybe had to type out a new message. I don't know. It's a very interesting story. He said it was a lot of pressure, especially when he sent it and did everything he thought was right, and then didn't know whether the guy got it or not. But he was quite humble about it. He said the main reason it was him was because he actually lived in Bracknell at the time, and he lived nearest, so he was the one who had to hotfoot it up and down the A329 into town to go and do these sort of tests at strange times.
Yeah,
and he was surrounded by his boss was at the company do one end. It was a Christmas do, so he sent a message, Merry Christmas, and he said it was like a scene in Men in Black, because he at the other end was surrounded by company bigwigs in all their suits as well, who all nervously surrounded him while everyone waited to see if the message had sent or not. So it was all very exciting. He lives in Canada now, and he's quite a humble guy. He's quite a normal chap, but obviously he's quite proud of what it's turned into. And he says that, you know, when he says it to his kids' friends, they don't believe him and have to go away and Google him and stuff like that. So it's quite a nice tale, and it's a very interesting first, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
You'd love telling people that, wouldn't you?
I would.
I invented him. But he doesn't say he invented them. Because he's just part of a team which sort of was testing them. But if ever I met anyone, that'd be one of the first things I'd tell them. Got phone?
I'd find a way to get it to squeeze it in there somehow. That'd be one way of getting people to stop getting their phones out while you were in. Oh, that Hugh's here again. If I get my phone out, he's going to tell me how he sent the first. Oh, God. I'm going to have to leave it. I'm going to have to be one way of stopping it.
Texting, are you? Oh, all right. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, here we go again.
Yeah, I know a bit about that.
Right. That is it for part one. In part two, we'll be chatting to Reading's own TikTok star, Hannah Lowther.
The Big Interview.
Hi everybody, I am here with Hannah Lowther, and I have been sort of I've spent a bit more time than I normally would trying to think of a clever sort of introduction to this piece, because I felt like that was something that I should possibly do, but I can't, I'm not that talented, at least not as talented as my guest currently. Hannah, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, busy.
Thanks for joining us. Now, I don't know if everybody has TikTok. It's only something that I've recently downloaded myself, but I was sent a link to some videos that you've been doing. And so let's get a little bit of background on you. Hannah, you were on the West End stage. Is that right?
Yeah. So I've been performing my whole life.
Yeah.
I did some stuff in the West End when I was a bit younger. And I went to do my training. So I did some training at Italia Conti and at the London School of Musical Theatre, and I graduated from there last summer, 2019. Right. So did Panto, sort of getting my career going, and then COVID happened. So obviously everything closed, so the career prospects at that time weren't looking great. Yeah. Hopefully it will get back.
You've got a job, and you're currently working at Tesco, at Reading Tesco. We decided just to keep it a little bit vague. There are plenty of Tescos to choose from. How are you finding things? It's obviously a change in your career. I don't want to come across as like it is what it is. People have to make ends meet. And how are you finding that sort of transition?
Honestly, I've been there for 6 months now, so yeah, it's just sort of the new normal for me at the moment. But I just think as performers and people, actors and creative people, we're quite used to having to, you know, have a job on the side or do different things, because you're never, it's never going to be a full-time job. So you might get a contract, for example, in the West End, but it will be a 9-month contract or a 10-month contract, and then you won't walk straight into the next show or the next job. So you do have to do stuff in between. So I think we're all sort of quite used to just doing whatever, really. You've got to pay bills. Yeah. So you just, you got to do what you got to do. And I was actually really lucky to get the job at Tesco, because it's such a hard time at the moment for people to get jobs. And obviously all the retail stuff went pretty quickly. So I was really lucky with that. And so close to home as well, so you don't have to travel. So yeah. I'm enjoying it.
that must make a bit of a difference. I've travelled into London myself for work at times as well, and I now work actually in Reading, where I live again, and that almost kind of makes it worth it at times, doesn't it? Do you think?
Yeah, and I think it's just nice. The industry it's quite intense, so in a way it's been quite nice to sort of get away from that for a little while, because it can be overwhelming. You know, you're facing rejections every day, you're having to compete against some of your best friends, and it's very competitive industry. So I'm not saying I want to work at Tesco forever, because I do have such a passion for musical theatre, but it has been quite nice to sort of get away from that for a little while and just sort of focus on on life. Musicals with a jazz band.
Well, you say that, but and obviously the reason that we're speaking to you is because, as I alluded to earlier, you've been quite busy on TikTok filming videos within Tesco, and some of these have been viewed. I think the most popular one's been viewed 2.4 million times, which in terms of TikTok, is that a lot? I don't have a reference point.
It is a lot. Yeah. Well, to start with, it wasn't. And it was like at 1 million. I was like, oh, okay, that's really good. But, you know, in terms of TikTok, any random video of a cat or a donkey can get 1 million views. But, like, now it's sort of gone a step further. 2.4 million. I think about, like, how many times that's been watched. I'm like, so much time has been spent watching me passing around the aisles of Tesco. It's just a bit crazy, really. But, trying to get that.
You've done an awful lot of videos now, but I think some of my favourite ones, just going through some of those, are the videos around the things in my Tesco job that remind me of my musical theatre career. I think those are excellent. So, in terms of doing these, just how do you do? When do you do them? I gather there's not people in the shop when you're doing them.
Yes, there is. Surprisingly.
Oh, okay.
I have no shame. When it's not busy, I do it. Because we're a Tesco Express, it's not sort of packed all the time. So there'll be times when there's no customers. I'm like, quick, get my phone out really quickly and just think of a TikTok and whack it out. And sometimes I haven't even pre-thought of it, and I'm just like, okay, I'll just like do something weird. And I think they're the ones that actually do better, where I just sort of do it on the spot. And my colleagues have caught me a few times. They just find it funny, I think. They quite enjoy having someone that is just sort of shaking things up a bit and just being a bit crazy.
Obviously, you know, you won't be the only person from sort of stage and screen that has had to kind of go and I almost want to say sort of just get a normal sort of 9-to-5 job, but even working at Tesco isn't a 9-to-5 job, is it? It's like, you know, I think Jason Manford, the comedian's done bits and pieces, and all sorts of different people have done bits. Do you think this is something that obviously, you know, as you say, on a regular basis, on the stage, you're having to do these kinds of things. Is this something that you would recommend people did, do you think?
I think it's good character building, definitely. I've experienced some things in this Tesco that I'm like, I feel like I've led a very sheltered life up until now, because where things happen and I'm like, I can't believe people do that, or I can't believe, I don't know. There's just some crazy things, and I think it has helped me build as a character. I think I'm a bit more thick-skinned now. When I first went in, I was like, what? On my first day, there was a shoplifter. And I'm like, the most dramatic person ever. And all of a sudden, someone's like, oh, yeah, that was a shoplifter. I was like, oh, my gosh, call the police. And they're like, no. It happens every day. So, like, just getting used to different things. But also, again, as actors, I think we're quite good at just putting on a friendly face or just adapting really quickly. And I think that's what I try to do. So, yeah, when you get a difficult customer, I think I'm sort of quite good at talking, and I just try and smile, put on a smile, even if it's really hard.
So on last week's podcast, we've had John Luther, who is the artistic director at South Street Arts Centre. And I kind of we've talked a bit about TikTok. I want to kind of move on to a little bit kind of about the arts in general, which I know obviously I feel like you can be a little bit of a spokesperson for. But we had John on talking about South Street Arts Centre in Reading, which is just sort of trying to get things back underway. What do you think kind of about the arts, and especially locally? What's your experience of that?
I'm not massively clued up on the local arts, unfortunately. I only really moved to Reading at the end of last year, so sort of just before all of this. So it's quite hard. I would love to get involved in things like that, but it's been quite hard, obviously, at this time with everything being closed. With the arts in general, I think it's just a shame that so many people view it as a hobby, because it is a hobby for so many people, you know. Mm. Take your kids to dance classes, or you know, they do piano lessons, but then they don't carry on because it's just their hobby. And I think people don't realize that this is a career. This is our livelihood, this is our passion, and this is how we make money and pay the bills. So I think it's hard for a lot of people, because they're having to think, all of this time and energy I've put into learning my trade, and it does take a lot of energy to do. I think lots of places, they don't have student loans at these performing arts colleges. It's hard, because you have to face the fact that maybe that might never happen. That career that you wanted your whole life might never happen for you. And it's not you that's stopping it, if that makes sense. Yeah. It's a bigger thing. Which is a big thing, obviously.
I did a little bit of research, which is very unusual for me. But I picked up you've been in it. You were big in the Basingstoke Gazette a few times, eight or ten. And I know you said in there, I think in one of them, it was your dream to be in The Sound of Music or Oliver, and a couple of those. What's the future hold? What is your sort of next dream? What's the big show that you want to be in?
I've always wanted to be in Legally Blonde.
Right. I don't
know how well you know it, but it's such a typical blonde girly girl musical, but it's just so feel good. And I was thinking about this the other day. I think a lot of people are like, oh, I only want to do it from the West End, but that's, for me, my view is just, if you love performing enough, and I know I'm trying to say, oh, it's a career, not a hobby, but just performing in any way should, you know, bring you joy. And yeah, I'd love to be in Legally Blonde. I don't care where. I'll my lounge. That's live stream. I'll do a one-woman show. No, I'd love to do that. Anything, honestly, anything. I just love performing. And it's just great connecting with other people that love it as well. So it's just that buzz you get in a rehearsal room, and in the dress rehearsal, and in the dressing rooms. And I just said changing rooms. That's how out of focus I am.
Yeah.
Rooms for your football game. No, the dressing rooms, darling. You just get such a buzz from it with other people as well. And
I was just wondering, just to kind of round off and go back to that sort of TikTok focus that we had. What does Tesco make of it? Have they said anything? I could sort of see advertising coming up for you perhaps in the future.
Well, I keep hinting at being hired for the next Tesco advert, but I've not heard anything. No, my actual store, so my store manager and all the staff there are all really supportive of it. And, you know, as long as I keep it pretty PG, I keep it completely PG and very positive. I don't think Tesco would really have anything bad to say about it. It's just free advertising for them at the moment. So yeah, I'd love to do something with Tesco on it, but I don't know. It depends. I don't want to jinx it. Touch wood.
If people were just kind of going, okay, they're listening to this and going, okay, first I've heard of this. Where I'll go and find out. Where would they start in terms of your sort of video library? Where should they start in the chronology?
So you download.
If we're saying this is a sort of a Hannah universe kind of thing.
Yeah. So you download TikTok. You get sucked into the TikTok world, and you there's lots of different realms of TikTok. There's a Tesco realm. There's a musical theatre realm. But look up Hannah Lowther 8 and you'll find me. I'm not 8 years old, I'm 23, but that was the only username they had. And I would, to be honest, I'd just scroll down to the bottom because most of my TikToks are Tesco related, bar one or two at the very start. And I did a series, things in my Tesco job that reminded my musical theatre career. I think I've done like up to part 11 of that. So loads of different things where I relate things. Products we sell and stuff to quotes from musicals or songs, and then sort of the big videos that blew up were the Tesco, the musical videos. So one of them was from a song from Tangled, the Disney film, and then another one was 9 to 5, Dolly Parton, which was sort of the big one.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping to do another one like that, but it does take time. So hopefully... If you stick around, I can produce another one of those at some point.
Well, I think it's more if you stick around, really. That's what we need to see.
True.
So, thank you, Hannah, very much for joining us. I was trying to think of an end there, and it's completely gone out of my head. This is how unstagey I am. I've got nothing to finish off with. But you're also on Twitter and Instagram as well. Do you want to give us those?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter and Instagram. I actually don't think I know my username. But if you just go to TikTok, you can basically find most of my stuff from there. But yeah.
Great. Hannah, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
The Big Interview.
That was our interview with Reading's very own TikTok star, Hannah Lowther. I feel like this question is going to fall on deaf ears, but do any of us have TikTok? Like Rach, once upon a time, you and I were out on the town. We've alluded to this already. You know, we were young things out on the town, drinking it up.
Many moons ago, yeah.
You know, being like, what is it, drinking and being merry and all that sort of thing, and just, you know, karaoke and bars and, you know, all sorts of shenanigans. And now I just feel like I'm far too old to know what TikTok is. I have downloaded it.
I prefer to handwrite a list these days.
Yeah. So is anybody familiar with TikTok?
I'm not on TikTok. I am only familiar with it because my friend's 10-year-old daughter has made some blinding videos, to be fair, which... they send for our amusement, and they are very funny. But beyond that, I did, in preparation for this podcast, I did go and watch Hannah's Dolly Parton takeoff for Tesco working 9 till 5. Yeah. It was very good.
Shall I play it? Shall I see if this will work? Shall we play it?
Okay.
I should be able to play it. Let's see if we can do this. Hang on a second. Oh, no, wrong one. Here we go. The wonders of technology. Entire screen. There we go. Let's see if this works.
Won't be able to see this, though.
You will. Yes, you will.
No, we will, but the listeners won't.
Oh, no, but they can hear it, and that's enough. Okay. Here we go. You ready?
Here she goes.
Yeah.
Credit, it's enough to drive you crazy if you let.
It's good. Very good. It's very good.
It's good.
I wrote something briefly on the interview I did. I've already recorded the interview, and I ended up listening to that repeatedly. And I did have 9 to 5 in my head a lot. And then it reminded me of the Woking 9 to 5 bus, which there was a meme of for a while, and everybody said it was not real, but it is real because it goes to Heathrow Airport.
Right.
And I did once try to get a picture for it, but I got told off by my wife because we were desperately trying. We were running for a plane because we were a bit late, and I'd stopped to take a picture of the Woking 9 to 5 bus. It came out all blurry, so it wasn't worth it at all. Anyway,
like that anecdote. Yeah.
Shall we move on to this week's random question?
Okay.
The random question.
This week's random question, then. Now, this alludes to our St. Undard earlier on. One of my follow-ups to that was, I demand a bank holiday, but it made me think, what in Reading needs its own bank holiday?
Oh, good one. Yeah, so we should try and get like 52 of them so that we can have every Monday off.
Oh, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
That would be great. 52 things in Reading that need a bank holiday. There's your next list, Hugh.
Ready Pop Festival.
It's on a bank holiday weekend, isn't it already?
Is it?
I can't remember now. No, it's not.
It's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, doesn't it?
Yes, no. Ready Pop does need a bank holiday. Yes.
So we could have Monday to recover, maybe.
Yeah.
And I want to know what we're going to do to celebrate, what is it?
St. Undards.
I assume we're just going to sit around and eat curry and poppadoms and onion bhajis all day.
I think a little bit like...
Which I am totally on board with.
Oh, yeah. No, a little bit like the ale trail. There would be a curry trail around Reading, and all of the curry houses would have, because you wouldn't sit in for a whole meal. They'd have some picky bit. Obviously, this is post COVID.
Oh, I love a picky
dinner.
You'd have some
like almost like a Sunday buffet kind of situation.
Yeah,
you just go along and have a little scoop of this, scoop of that. Oh, move on to walk on to the next one. Oh, how good would that be? I've got it all planned.
I could go with that. Yeah, that would be
totally get on board.
That'd be a great way to spend a Sunday afternoon walking around Reading, having bits of curry. I think we should have an escape room bank holiday. So because there's what 5 or 6 escape rooms in Reading, so you should have a bank holiday weekend where you can go and do them all.
Yeah, I've never done one. Still,
have you not?
Oh. No.
They're great. You know,
there was as many as that. 5.
Yeah, there's definitely four or five. There's the one next to the walkabout, Time Trap, who we've had on the show a few times. There's one on Castle Hill. And there's a couple of others as well, which I've off the top of my head I can't remember, but it's definitely.
Go on then, Hugh, what's yours?
I'd like to see a bank holiday to mark the start of the cricket season because the Monday after I play my first game, I always feel awful. I can't move. My shoulders are grinding away in the most horrible fashion, and I quite often spend most of the day getting cramp. So if we could have, basically, so I can have the day off and recover from what is a fairly tame game of village cricket, to be honest, that would be marvellous. But last weekend in April as well, so you get that one, and then you could just get the May bank holiday almost straight away afterwards. So
when you get 2 in May, so this is edging ever closer to my let's have one every week plan.
Yeah.
although I don't think one just to suit Hugh is quite fair.
Well, it's any cricketers, isn't it? Really.
Wait till I'm in charge, Tom.
Oh, good Lord!
You better start being nice to me.
We thought it was bad now. Rach, well, I know we came up with a couple yesterday, but I didn't write any of them down, so that was good of me.
This planning meeting, which I didn't didn't attend clearly went well, Tom, for you, considering you can't remember anything but anything you came up with.
For the second week in a row, yes.
You were making note. I remember you saying, I'm just writing that down about a few things. You just were selective about what you thought was relevant.
I clearly didn't.
were you doing pretend writing?
Yes. Well, I was thinking maybe we could have a street food bank holiday weekend, which would be amazing. Or because we've got a couple of burger places as well, like a burger weekend bank holiday. That would be great too. A big festival of burgers.
So what you're saying, Tom, is you just want to spend every single weekend stuffing your face.
Food related, Tom, so far.
It's not much different to most of my weekends as it goes. So
what about you can have an emergency bank holiday in the summer if it gets a bit hot?
Oh yes.
So you should be like, it's a bit hot, take the day off.
Yeah, what if we have a really hot run though, like we did this summer? Like you've got to have a cut off. If it goes above 30.
It goes about 25.
Yeah, if it goes above a nice balmy 23, then we want to have a day off. Yeah.
What about another religious festival, like maybe Easter 2 or post Christmas?
Is that not Boxing Day, no?
No. Sorry, pre-Christmas. You could have it like in about September, and it could just be like, you know, celebrate when shops start putting their Christmas displays up.
Oh my God, that'd be August.
Oh dear. Right. Okay, that is, I think, pretty much it for this week. We'd love to hear your own bank holiday ideas. See what you can come up with. Let us know. In the meantime, here is Jeremy with how you can get in touch with us.
Get in touch with the team. Email hello@realreadingpodcast.co.uk. Find us on Twitter and Instagram @realreadingpod. And join our Facebook group by searching Real Reading Podcast.
Thanks, Jeremy. That is enough for this week. We'll be back with more next week. Whether I will be here or not, we don't know. Rach, you may well be in charge of the big ship.
God, we're saying that every week at the minute, and I'm getting more nervous with each mention of it.
Well, also, I'm not here, so.
But you will be here, won't you?
Flying
solo.
You
are here, you're back. You're back.
No, I'm not back, I'm away. You said you're back on Thursday.
In the last planning meeting we had, you said you were back.
No, I'm not back.
Awkward. You definitely said, because you said the days you were away.
No, I'm sure we said I'm here this week and not next week.
No, you said you'd be back in time for next week.
No, I didn't.
You did check the dates with Sharona and said, oh, yeah, actually, it should be okay.
Yeah, you did.
I think we're coming back on Thursday.
That's not what you said the other week.
Anyway, it's probably not one for the podcast. All that bit out.
Nah, it's all content.
I was recording, I didn't even realise.
Yeah. So, guys, it'd just be me sat here talking to myself, which is what I do all day, most days, anyway. Right. So I can involve the cat or... something, I don't know.
If you have any suggestions for people we could interview, please do get in touch, although maybe don't bother for a week or so. And if you have a moment, please give us a rating on your podcast app and submit a lovely review if you can. We'll be back maybe next week for more Redingy podcast goodness.
Bye.
Are you not saying bye, Hugh?
Oh, ta-ra.
God.
You're listening to the Real Reading Podcast. Strong active leadership. Chaos with Ed Miliband.